The following program, Issues, etc., is a repeat broadcast. Please do not attempt to call the program.
Greetings and welcome to Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Well, while many of us were sitting in church this morning, our president, President Bush, announced the beginning of airstrikes in and around Afghanistan. With this news in hand, we've decided to preempt our interview that was scheduled with Dr. Beverly Yonke on the Christian spirituality for the family and take up the subject of ministry to soldiers, the military chaplaincy. To help us with that, my guest in this hour, Dr. Jack Preuss, will be joining us in just a second. What do the soldiers, the seamen, the airmen, who are ready to deploy, being deployed, seeing action, perhaps even as we speak, what is going through their minds? What about their families' minds? We'll be talking about that. What business does a chaplain, a Christian chaplain, have on the battlefield? Should Christians even be at war? We'll discuss this tonight. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. My guest, Dr. Jack Preuss, is president of Concordia University in Irvine, California. He spent 6 months as a reserve Navy chaplain attached to a Marine battalion during Desert Shield and Desert Storm. Dr. Preuss, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be back with you.
What is going through the minds of the soldiers, the airmen, the seamen, and their families right now?
Well, it's a real difficult time for them, and I can remember vividly about 10 years ago when the same thing was going through my mind as I was being activated from the reserve status and being deployed. We've trained for this. Military personnel are well-trained, best-trained military in the world, and they're ready to go. But when the order comes to deploy and when it's time to leave home or the home station and deploy into the field, why, many things go through your mind. You're worried about your family. Will they be adequately taken care of? Have you got your affairs in order? During the past few weeks, a lot of people have been scrambling to make sure that their wills are up to date, that their spouses have powers of attorney, and all kinds of things, very practical things. But mostly, their minds are turning now to the grim reality of war and what that might mean in terms of either of their own lives being put in danger or faced perhaps with the necessity of having to take someone else's life. It's a sobering thought. So people are beginning to think about sort of the ultimate kinds of questions as well. While they train, they get ready to go, but they're thinking about what comes after this life, too.
This is what soldiers and seamen and airmen train for as part of their duty, as part of their privilege to serve our company, our country, in the armed forces. But Christian pastors, they don't train for war. What business does a Christian chaplain have on the battlefield?
Well, what business do we have in having chaplains in the military, perhaps, is the prior question, because if we grant that we're going to have chaplains, then I think people would understand that the chaplains need to be where the folks are,
well,
ministering to.
Do Christian pastors have any business dealing with the military at all? They're men of peace.
Well, of course, in our country, they have the freedom to do that voluntarily or not. And so if there are pastors, and I'm sure there are many who sort of have qualms about this or may not feel comfortable about being in the military, of course, the vast majority of pastors are not. But for those who choose to do so, it's a vital ministry. It's an opportunity to proclaim the gospel and apply the word and the sacraments in a situation that is completely unique and in a situation of perhaps greatest need when faced with uncertainty and danger and perhaps death. Pastors need to be where their flock is. And we have men and women who are Christians and members of our congregation who are serving in the military. In fact, our country has a long tradition of having military chaplains. One of the rights that is granted in the First Amendment is the freedom to practice our religion. And so the military in our country has always provided that we would have the free exercise of our faith by providing our men and women in the military with chaplains who can serve them in a spiritual way.
Does the gospel really matter to men and women at war?
Well, of course, yes.
I mean, they're incredibly busy. They are worried about making themselves ready, putting to use all their training,
yeah,
keeping themselves safe, and carrying out their duty. What does the gospel have to do with that?
Well, it has a great deal to do with it, I think, because when you go to war, you need to be ready, not only physically, not only mentally, but also spiritually. You have to have your, you might say, your affairs in order. You have to know your duty. You have to be able to draw upon the training that you've received. But you also need to have your spiritual life in order too, and that can be an important task for a chaplain. In fact, although and I can recall, you know, pretty vividly nowadays, now that we're talking about mobilizing reservists and mobilizing again for a military conflict, I remember very clearly what it was like for me going into Desert Shield and Desert Storm. And although we're extremely busy training for 18 hours every day and getting ready to deploy, we still were very concerned about our spiritual lives. And there was a strong interest, at least on the part of the Marines that I was serving with, and I know that's true today, a strong interest in nurturing their faith and seeking to connect, perhaps, again, maybe after a lapse, with God and with their faith. So I worked very hard as a chaplain to provide religious services, to be there with the Word of God for them in the places where they were. Of course, we didn't always have the freedom to all stop everything and come to a church service. I had to have many church services, many Bible studies. We would meet late at night or early in the morning. And we would do it in groups and individually, but my job was to provide everyone who needed it with the opportunity to exercise their faith.
Define that word. We've used it several times here, the gospel. What do you mean? This is what the chaplain carries onto the battlefield. What is it?
Well, certainly for me, it's the gospel, the good news that on account of Christ and his perfect life and death, God now favors us with his grace and loves us and has turned his wrath away from us. And so, for me, it is the that beautiful message that we are justified freely by God's grace through faith on account of Christ. That's what the gospel is. Of course, in the military, there are many people who are not Christians. There's Jews and Muslims and many others. And so, there's a variety of types of chaplains in the military, hopefully, so that people can exercise their faith, in accordance with their own heritage. But for me, it was a great opportunity to proclaim the gospel and to give the Marines hope through faith in Jesus.
The Marines are a tough bunch of guys and girls, aren't they?
Well, they sure are. And they pride themselves on it. And I had a wonderful time with the 3rd Battalion, 24th Marines. They were a fabulous group of people, but they were all business. But that didn't mean that they weren't interested in their spiritual lives. And that didn't mean that they weren't strong and committed Christians. They were. They came to service. They studied the Bible. They spoke with me repeatedly about their faith. So there's no way is there a distinction between someone being very courageous and ready for battle and at the same time being a strong and committed Christian.
Tell us about your experience as a military chaplain in the Gulf War.
Well, I had I was a seminary professor at Concordia Seminary at the time and pretty suddenly recalled active duty, so I was forced to make a real adjustment in my own life, going from a relatively comfortable existence and safe existence being sent to Camp Lejeune and then ultimately to Saudi Arabia in a situation of combat. So it was a kind of a jarring experience, as it was for many people. So that part of it was interesting. But what I found the most interesting thing were the many great opportunities for really effective and meaningful ministry. I baptized 5 Marines during that time because they suddenly became confronted with their own mortality and began to ask questions about what does life mean and what if I were to die and what happens after this life. A 20-year-old Marine may never have seriously even asked that question before, but suddenly in a situation of combat, they're asking that. And I was there to give them an answer. And I told them, here's what's, you know, it, through faith in Jesus Christ, here is what comes after this life. And so 5 Marines sought baptism at my hand, and it was a wonderful experience. In fact, let me tell you the story about a corporal. It was a big, strapping Marine, very, very courageous guy.
I'll tell you what, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to hear that story.
All right, I'll tell it to you.
My guest, Dr. Jack Preuss, he's president of Concordia University in Irvine, California. He spent 6 months as a reserve Navy chaplain attached to a Marine battalion during Desert Shield and Desert Storm. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. When we come back from this break, we'll hear some of the stories from the Gulf War as Dr. Preuss was there as a military chaplain. Also, we're going to find out about the tension that a military chaplain experiences between peace among soldiers and what exactly a chaplain does when he's deployed on the battlefield. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
If Christian doctrine can be true or false, can Christian practice also be true or false? Is Christian practice always neutral? What's the relationship between Christian doctrine and Christian practice? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled Doctrine and Practice, and you can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. I've also written an article on the Lord's Supper titled Responding to Real Absence Arguments. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources on issues such as American evangelicalism, church history, biblical interpretation, and much more. Ask to receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal, 1-800-737-0172. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For those of you listening to us in central Wisconsin, don't forget to support our affiliate there, Christian Family Radio, WGNV 88.5 FM, during their Joyful Harvest Share-a-thon this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's October 9th through the 11th. WGNV is a non-commercial station. Now, that means that they rely on your support to bring you programs like Issues Etc. So if you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. Sunday nights on Christian Family Radio, WGNV, please prayerfully consider making a gift Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday of this week. We're talking about ministry to soldiers, military chaplaincy with Dr. Jack Preuss. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. Before we went to the break, Dr. Preuss, you were going to tell us a story about a young corporal.
Well, yeah, it's a kind of a poignant story, and I think it, for me, it sort of crystallized in my mind why I was there and what difference the gospel makes. During Operation Desert Storm, the air war had been going on for some time, and we were about to launch the ground war. That was primarily a war for tank battalions, and they went in the lead, and they went into Kuwait, and they pretty much routed the Iraqis. But the night before the ground war launched, a Marine corporal came to my tent where I was, and he said, Chaplain, I'd like to talk to you. And he said, tomorrow I'm detaching from this unit, which was a reserve unit, and I'm going to be going into the tank battalion unit, and Chaplain, I'm scared. And this big strapping guy admitted to being scared. I said, "Well, sit down, Corporal. Let's talk about this." And he told me about it and why he was scared. Now, I asked him, I inquired into his background, and I discerned that he really didn't know much about Christianity, had never been baptized. I shared with him the contents of the creed, and we briefly talked about baptism. And I asked him, "Corporal, would you like to be baptized?" And he said, "Yes, Chaplain, I would." And I baptized him there. He knelt on the floor before me, and I had some water in my canteen, and we used that to baptize him. And then in the waters of baptism and in the name of the triune God, he went off to war. And it somehow, in a physical way, made him feel stronger and more comforted. And he thanked me, and he went off. And I got busy, and I went on to other things. And after the war was over, after the ground war was over, and we were beginning to withdraw, he came back to rejoin our unit, and he came to see me one day. And he said, "Chaplain, I wanted to thank you for what you did for me. And it strengthened me, and it gave me comfort." And in fact, he even shared with me that while he was in the ground war, he had had some, he had been involved in some firefights, some rifle fighting with some of the Iraqis, and had, in fact, had to kill a couple of them because they were resisting, and that did happen. Unfortunately, not all of the Iraqis surrendered, and so he came back to me, and he was a little guilt-stricken about that, and he asked, "Chaplain, did I do something wrong in shooting those Iraqis?" Now, I had to work through that with him and tell him that, you know, he was a Marine, and he did what he was trained to do. But what I found interesting, Todd, was that he realized, and he couldn't even explain it, but he realized that because of his baptism, he was different. Something had changed in his life, and he wanted to come back and check with me to see if it was okay. And I saw that the gospel really does make a difference. It really does strengthen. It makes us bold, and it changes our lives. And I know that many chaplains who were there and those who are going now into this new battle will have the same kinds of experiences, the same challenges, and the same joys of seeing that the gospel really does make a difference, even on a battlefield.
Two things strike me about that story. First of all, we often forget how young the men and women who fight for us are, that they are just on the far side of being kids, really.
That's right. That's right.
And we often forget that even with all of their training, especially among the Marines, I mean, they're rough and tough, that there is still fear in their hearts when they face battle.
Well, there sure is. And I don't know of any who aren't really in their hearts afraid. They may not show it. And, of course, not many came to me seeking help in that situation, although I did counsel with many Marines. But they're able to muster the courage that it takes to overcome their fears and the uncertainty and to do what duty calls them to do.
How big of an issue was the issue of guilt? Maybe not just guilt for what they think they may have done on the battlefield, because it's sometimes the way we fight nowadays, difficult to tell whether you had taken any lives, but also guilt beforehand, wondering if they had the courage to do what they'd been trained to do.
Well, I think it's a big issue for many. They do through their training. They learn that this is their job. They learn not to take it personally, that they're doing it for their country, and in the case of the Marines, they're doing it for the Corps, and so they sort of objectify it in that way. But I know that often it kind of comes close to home, and there are many tensions that fighting men and women experience, and there are times when it can appear to come into conflict with their Christian faith.
Is there also something that you need to counter as a chaplain, that esprit de corps that sometimes manifests itself among soldiers as machismo, as kind of the blood and guts mentality?
Well, I looked upon that as a sort of a defense mechanism, frankly. I came to love them, and I knew what was sort of behind the the external facade of kind of hardness and the bravado. I think that they have to do it. It's sort of like putting on the uniform, and it's something that they have to do in order to provide them with courage in order to go out. It's not an easy thing to face death. It's not an easy thing to take another life. And so you arm yourself, you equip yourself, you train, you put on body armor, and you put on kind of a bravado kind of an attitude. I looked upon it as that, and so I didn't take it terribly seriously.
Is there also a tension for the chaplain himself? He is a man of peace. He is a non-combatant among men and women who are there to make war.
Well, there sure is, and there was for me. Again, I want to reiterate that in our country, we do not have a forced draft, and we have a completely voluntary force, and there shouldn't be a single chaplain in any of our armed forces that would have a conscience problem about being there, and if he did, he shouldn't be there, because it's voluntary. But for me, you know, I really do, because I'm a theologian, and I have asked these questions about what is a just war, when is war appropriate, when is it not. As a citizen, I have concerns about when our country should go to war. What are appropriate provocations for it? What is the, for example, in this case, what's the proper response to this horrible terrorist attack upon our country? And I think as citizens we can argue about that. And I think as Christians we can argue about the level of hostility that we are willing to go into. But for me as a chaplain in the military, there was no tension at all. I was there in order to be a voice of peace in a context of war. I was there to proclaim the gospel to men who were going to war. I wasn't there to cast judgment upon them, upon our government, or upon any of the decision makers about why we were doing what we were doing, but I was there to be a voice of peace and of comfort for people who were in a very, very difficult situation. So as a chaplain, we had tensions, but our job was pretty clear. We were non-combatant. I was not even permitted to bear an arm, and I was not interested in doing that. I simply was there to be a voice of peace.
Dr. Jack Preuss is my guest. We'll be right back.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese on why he's a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I belong to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod because it has continually upheld the truth of God's Word and the biblical teachings of Jesus Christ, which do not change with the vagaries of time and culture. Particularly important to me has been the Church's work on college campuses and its system of Lutheran higher education. I am proud that my father at one time helped lead that system, which provides a spiritual foundation for so many young people throughout our country.
If you want to learn more about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, call our Issues Etc. resource line at 1-800-737-0172 and ask to receive a free pamphlet called What About the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration.
Wouldn't it be great if we went through life without any problems? Well, that's just not the way things are. Life can get tough, but we can face whatever comes along with peace and confidence, because there is reason for hope. We're your neighbors, the people of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we'd like you to know that with Christ, there's plenty of hope to go around.
A message from your friends at Issues Etc.
the Big Bang. Is it biblical?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the book One Blood, The Biblical Answer to Racism. Well, can some Christians say that the Big Bang theory of the origin of the universe is such an obvious fact that we should accept it in the same way we do the words of the Bible? What's your response?
Well, our Creation magazine once featured an interview with Dr. Danny Faulkner, an astronomy professor at a major American university. His response to the Big Bang was, quote, "I'm really concerned with people who put that much faith in the Big Bang. As a Christian, my biggest concern is that it doesn't agree at all with the Genesis account of how the world came to be, and my big concern is that when you make that the fingerprint of God, as it were, then when the Big Bang is discarded, what does that do to Christianity?" End of quote. Dr. Faulkner points out a very important point that all Christians need to take seriously. You see, if a Christian has accepted the Big Bang as fact, and then has used this belief to reinterpret God's word in Genesis, what happens when the Big Bang theory is finally discarded? This means they have to change their understanding of the Bible. We need to stick with the answers found in Genesis.
If the Big Bang is wrong, here's another question about our universe. Is there life in outer space? Well, Ken Ham offers answers in his new booklet on extraterrestrial life. It's available free when you go to our website, answersradio.com. It's provided by the Answers Ministry at answersradio.com.
Five 31 at AM 850 KFUO. Good afternoon. Weather for St. Louis. Cloudy tonight. Showers and thunderstorms are likely. Low of about 44. Tomorrow partly cloudy and a high near 53. Right now overcast and 55 in St. Louis. Another look at St. Louis traffic. Eastbound 270 heavy and slow in the right lanes at St. Charles Rock Road. Westbound 70 is heavy and slow at 170 through Lambert Field. Northbound 270 at Page Avenue, stop-and-go traffic, then in the right lanes, exiting onto westbound 70. Southbound 270, heavy and slow Page to Doherty Ferry. Westbound 40 at Kings Highway, slow traffic to Hanley, also pockets of slow going, Brentwood to Lindbergh, and stop-and-go from Ballas to Mason. Eastbound 40 at Compton, heavy traffic headed for the Poplar Street Bridge. And northbound 55 at 44, expect slow traffic in the right lane. That's traffic and weather. I'm Craig Allen.
The woman today is thinking, planning, doing something for over 750 meals a year.
Time to get organized, Mom.
It helps with self-esteem a little bit to feel like you're an efficient manager of your own family.
Next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the results of the Incarnation with Dr. Ken Sherb. How are the divine and human natures of Jesus Christ related to one another? How can Christ have two natures yet be only one person? Is Jesus still human? What difference does it make? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. with Ken Sherb. If you want to know what we're going to be discussing each week on our program throughout the remainder of October and into November, go to our website at www.issuesetc.org, and there you'll find a list of the topics and the guests for the weeks ahead. And when you're there, be sure to read an article by our guest in this hour, Dr. Jack Preuss, titled Suffering and Joy, The Ministry as Participation in Christ's Cross, and an article by Dr. Dan Gard titled Peace for the Warrior. You'll find both these resources under the What's New section of the website, www.issuesetc.org. In view of the retaliatory attacks this morning in Afghanistan, we've changed the subject for this hour of Issues Etc. We're talking with Dr. Jack Preuss about Ministry to Soldiers, the Military Chaplaincy. He's president of Concordia University in Irvine, California. He spent 6 months as a Reserve Navy chaplain attached to a Marine battalion during Desert Shield and Desert Storm. If you'd like to join us, your questions and your comments are welcome. 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Preuss, before the break, you raised the issue of a just war. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a classic definitions of just war. St. Augustine had articulated elements of that. Basically, it means a a war that is non-aggressive, that is not invasive, that is in order to establish justice or counter wrong. In the case of this current activity, there's a lot of talk about war. I'm not really, it is a war on terrorism, I suppose, but it's a very different kind of war than we have traditionally had, which is a war between nations, a war between alliances of nations. Here we have instead a war or a conflict against covert terrorists, which don't really represent any nation at all. Makes it both more difficult to deal with, that is, I think, from a strategic military perspective, much more difficult, but certainly, I think, from an ethical perspective, much easier. These folks are terrorists. Their modus operandi is to attack innocent people. So I don't even know if the categories usually are historically associated with the concept of a just war apply, really, in this case, since it's mostly in self-defense that we're launching this campaign to eliminate these terrorist cells and groups.
Is there any question in the mind of the soldiers whom you serve as a chaplain on issues like this when they're on the battlefield, or all those things completely resolved in their minds?
Well, I can speak from my experience during the time of Desert Shield and Desert Storm, and that was real similar to this. In a lot of respects, there was a great deal of national consensus that we needed to build this coalition, and that we needed to rescue Kuwait from the invasion that Iraq had brought against it. But while there was a lot of consensus, there were still many questions and issues, and people were asking the questions about, is this a measured response? Is our response appropriate? Certainly we need to do something, but it doesn't need to be at this level. And so when we were first going into it, I think that many of our armed service personnel were asking questions, is this really necessary? Should we really be doing this? But in time, and it doesn't take much time, we put those kinds of questions behind us. We have a task to do. We've received orders. And we have to go forward and lay plans to accomplish the mission. So very quickly, although we're human beings and we're citizens, and I think people that haven't been in the military would be very impressed at how thoughtful military personnel are. They're very intelligent, well-educated, and while they have their own minds and thoughts, they put those behind and they devote themselves to their tasks. And I think that that's absolutely essential for the accomplishment of any mission. I don't think there's very much second-guessing at all on the part of our military personnel. We have a few citizens who are questioning this course of action, but I don't think in the military at all.
Even if we came to the conclusion that Christians shouldn't go to war as individuals, is there still a reason for Christian chaplains to be there?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, we could debate whether Christians can decide that we shouldn't go to war, and of course there's a huge debate about that, but I think that chaplains need to be where military personnel are precisely because they need us there. You know, in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which I represent, our Ministry of the Armed Forces Committee comes under the general heading of our Board for Mission Services. We see this as a mission, an outreach of the church into a military context, not dissimilar to taking the gospel into a new country or a new region where it hasn't been heard before. Of course, many, maybe even most of military personnel are Christians, or they certainly know of Jesus, but still, it's a missionary outreach on the part of our church. So if you look upon it as mission, then, yes, we need to be there, just like we need to be preaching the gospel in Japan or in Uganda or in Argentina. We need to be there because we have what they really need, and that's the precious gospel of our Lord Jesus.
I think it's difficult to imagine what a chaplain actually does during the time of war. In your case, deployed in Desert Shield and Desert Storm. What are the conditions? What are you doing day to day with the soldiers?
Well, it's a good question.
I can see what the soldiers are doing. You know, at least I can imagine in my mind. I have a hard time imagining what you were doing.
Well, I'll tell you what I was doing. Although, let me just say that in generally in the military, the chaplain has two primary jobs. And when I have resigned my commission now, I'm no longer in, but when I used to wear my uniform, I had two kinds of insignia. One was a cross signifying that I was in the chaplain corps, that I had a spiritual mission. And the other one was that I wore a rank insignia, which indicated that I was an officer in the military. And so, at least in peacetime, you have these two functions. There are certain functions that you serve as an officer, and every chaplain has the kind of maybe bureaucratic or administrative duties that go along with being a general, not a general officer, but an officer of the kinds of duties that any other officer might have. But as a chaplain, the chaplain's responsibility is to tend to the spiritual well-being of the troops. That's an essential part of the mission, and the military still believes that those who have a solid spiritual foundation will be better at accomplishing their mission. So that's the way it was during peacetime. But when we went to war, when we were deployed into the theater of combat, that balance really shifted. I became much more of a pastor. I spent much, much more of my time ministering in a spiritual way to the men and women of my battalion than I ever did during peacetime. I thought that was really interesting. We sort of clarified what the task was. So I spent my day going to where my troops were, and I thought of them as my flock or even my congregation, even though many of them, you know, weren't interested in my services. We had a number that weren't Christians. Some were Muslims and some were Jews. But I spent my day going to where they were. In my case, I was part of a reserve battalion, which was mobilized intact. But once we got in country, we were split apart, and we were detached by companies to do different functions. One of my companies was in Bahrain, which is in an island off the Arabian coast. They were doing security detail at one of the airfields there. Another company was up in northern Saudi Arabia near the Iraqi border, and they became involved in the processing of Iraqi prisoners of war. And so I would travel. I would probably travel 3-4 days a week going to these remote areas, and when I came, I would have had an assistant in the area, and I would have said, I'm coming on Tuesday afternoon, and would you put the word out? We'll have a service. And I would have a worship service or a Bible study just about every single day of the week, sometimes more than once a day. The traveling was pretty far between these different posts, so it would take a while. I would have multiple worship services on Sunday at the main camp where we were. I would do a lot of individual counseling. I served as a staff officer for the battalion, so I would be involved in staff reporting. So I spent a great deal of my time with the troops, serving them and providing the ministry of the gospel to them.
I think I met at one time the young man who was assigned as your bodyguard, because you were forbidden to carry a firearm
right
there. And he was, I met him on the campus of the seminary where you served as a professor, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Lance Corporal Blanford. He was a marvelous young man. I picked him because he, of course, he was from the sniper detail. He was an expert marksman. He knew how to handle all the weapons.
That makes a good bodyguard, I guess.
But you know why I picked him? His mother wrote me a letter. And she said, dear chaplain, I wanted to thank you for what you do for these young men of your battalion, and I want you to know that I'm praying for you. So I thought that was such a marvelous letter that I went to find this guy. I had never met him before. And I said, if your mom is so dedicated, I want you to be my assistant. And he was thrilled, and so he became my Marine assistant. He was my driver, my bodyguard, and although I didn't carry a weapon, he carried many of them, And he knew how to use them really well.
That's kind of comforting when you're in the theater of operations there, I guess.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a picture of my guest, Dr. Jack Proy, standing out in front of a tent. And boy, I tell you what, this landscape looked bleak. And he looked pretty raggedy. I was used to seeing Dr. Proy pretty snappily dressed. Usually he was color coordinated with the tie around his neck standing there in the classroom. And then I saw a picture of him as he was serving as a military chaplain to these Marines in Saudi Arabia. He was covered with sand. He looked pretty tired. His hair wasn't combed just as well as it always was.
It was a little shorter there, too,
I think. Certainly was a little shorter. And I remember some of the stories he told when he got back. When we come back, we're going to hear a few more of them. And we're going to talk about the temptation toward compromising one's theology as a military chaplain.
You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
Is private confession and absolution a Roman Catholic practice? Did you know that Martin Luther called this practice a third sacrament? And how can this practice help resolve conflict in the church? You'll find answers to these questions with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section, issuesetc.org. Confession and Forgiveness is written by Ted Kober of Peacemaker Ministries, a Christian reconciliation organization. The book costs $9.99 plus shipping and handling. Confession and Forgiveness, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House. That number, 1-800-325-3040.
The following program, Issues Etc., is a repeat broadcast. Please do not attempt to call the program.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the military chaplaincy, ministry to soldiers, with Dr. Jack Proyce during this hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. Your phone number, your phone calls, and our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. Your questions and your comments are welcome. Dr. Proyce, living conditions in Saudi Arabia, even as a chaplain, even as an officer, were pretty rough, weren't they?
Well, it was you know, a little different than what I had been accustomed to as a seminary professor. Most of the nights we had a cot that we could sleep on. Occasionally we would have nothing more than to sleep out in, under the open stars on the sand. What happened was an interesting thing. Your life, at least in terms of sort of the comforts, became reduced down to the bare minimum. We had very good food. And we were had good equipment, but things like sleeping, other kinds of comforts, we took, you know, cold showers and that type of thing. You just got used to it.
This has a tendency to draw you closer to the men that you're serving, even as a chaplain, do you think?
Well, I think it did. Certainly we were all, you know, the esprit de corps, we were all in the same situation. The chaplain didn't get hot showers, while the junior enlisted men, you know, took cold showers. The commanding officer didn't have any better situation than anyone else. So in that sense, we were all the same.
I want to ask you about something you wrote, and it's in the context of an article you wrote, Suffering and Joy, the Ministry as Participation in Christ's Cross. And you begin that article with a story about a letter you received from another chaplain after you returned to the United States from the Persian Gulf. And he referred to you as, he talked about how much the men missed you. And then he referred to you as our image of the second man. What did he mean by that?
Well, that was wasn't a chaplain. It was Dr. Ilton, who was the battalion physician. He had been a very a good friend of mine. We hit it off. He in fact, was a Lutheran. Just coincidentally, and I had never met him before, we were called. He was a strong member of my congregation and saw me as his pastor. And so he was referring to that passage in 1 Corinthians, which speaks about the image of Christ. And what he was trying to tell me was that I represented Christ to him, the image of that first Adam. which is the way Paul put it. That was a very remarkable letter, and one which, in a way, when after it was all over and I was already home, sort of put the capstone on the whole experience. And I really rejoiced in a very humble way at having been given the incredible privilege of letting people there in that desolate place under those horrible circumstances see a glimpse of Jesus. And it wasn't me personally. It was me as a pastor. It was the office of the ministry, but through my preaching and through my words, and in his case, and with the Lutherans that were there, through the sacrament, they saw Christ. Jesus was there with them. That just made it all worthwhile for me.
There's a lot of talk today, especially since September 11th, about how what we really need is unity among all the religions. If we could do that, we could really end a lot of this trouble, especially between Christianity and Islam. And people are saying that Christians and Muslims and Jews all worship the same God. Is this the view you have to adopt when you go into the theater of war with soldiers who are of all different religions, chaplains who are of all different religions?
Well, certainly not. We couldn't do that. If we did, we would cease to be Christian and we would lose all integrity. You know, I think what the military needs from its chaplains, as from all of its members, is the strength of integrity. But the military is an incredibly diverse or pluralistic kind of environment, and you'll find just about everything in it. It's not like serving in a local congregation where everybody's a member. You have to be able to serve every single person in the unit in some way. Some cases that meant I could serve them directly, as in the case of Dr. Hilton and the other Lutherans. We had communion services, and in a unique way, it was like a congregation. In other cases, with other Christians, they came to the services, and we had the service of the Word and preaching, and so I served them in that way. In the case of the many Catholic servicemen in my unit, they really didn't feel comfortable coming to Protestant worship services, so I made arrangements to bring a Catholic chaplain to them. They were grateful to me for that, by the way, and they loved me as their chaplain precisely because I provided this to them. We had Muslim members. They wouldn't come to a Christian service. Instead, I ensured that they had a place and a time where they could gather together and have their prayer services, and likewise with the Jews that we had, which were only a few. So I don't compromise. We don't get into a syncretistic that is a mixture of all the religions. Instead, I, as the chaplain, sought to provide for them to be able to worship their God in the way they understood it. But when I did that, I didn't mean to be saying that I thought that all religions were the same and worship the same God. I preached and ministered with the same clear, pure gospel message that I did at seminary or I did when I was a parish pastor.
Is there a temptation to compromise one's theology as a military chaplain?
Yeah, sure there is. I think there's a temptation anywhere, and you as a parish pastor know that there are many temptations there, too. But I think the tensions are greater in a military context precisely because of this pluralism. And, of course, many chaplains do fall into that temptation, and they do feel that their task is to preach a kind of a washed-out, generic kind of spirituality. But the military provides in its policies that each chaplain is to preach and minister according to his own faith. The faith groups and their traditions are respected, and while the tensions are great, it is certainly possible to be a chaplain with integrity, and to be a confessional Lutheran chaplain in the military is a difficult thing. But it's not at all impossible, and we have many excellent chaplains who are doing it and doing it really well.
With only a few minutes before we have to go, Mike's calling from Overland Park, Kansas, listening on KCCV. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Pastor. Thanks for your time. I'm curious to find out what challenges you foresee both the servicemen and the servicemen acting as chaplains face that the opponent has declared a holy war against Christianity in the Western Hemisphere.
That's a really great question, and I think that's going to be an issue It was also in the Desert Storm operation because they felt that all chaplains were like political officers, and I think there's going to be a similar kind of thing in this situation. I certainly don't pretend to know very much about what's going on and what's going to happen. I doubt that there'll be too many chaplains going into Afghanistan. They'll instead be placed, I think, in wherever the major bases are located. But I do think that many will see the chaplains as being particularly agents of evil or political agents. And it's not a safe thing to be certainly a Christian chaplain in many of those areas.
So simply for the faith that they are there to proclaim and deliver.
Yeah, I mean, they would be, I mean, it's illegal to be anything but a Muslim in Afghanistan. It's illegal to be a Christian or to practice Christianity. So naturally, the teachers of Christianity, the pastors or chaplains, would be the first sort of targets.
With only about a minute, what is your prayer for those chaplains who will serve our soldiers in the conflict that we are involved in, for the soldiers themselves, as a military chaplain or former military chaplain?
Well, I pray for their families back home who are worried about them and who don't really know where they are or what's going on. I pray for them that they might accomplish their missions with courage and integrity, and that they might be safe and come home. I really pray that we can find a way through this to if not rid the world, at least put terrorism back in its under a rock where it belongs, so that we can have a world, a country that's safe. I pray for our leaders. I pray that this would not be a prolonged thing. There's just so many things I would like to pray for, and that we should all pray for. God willing, we will accomplish this. We will do it well and definitively, and that we will be able to bring our loved ones home very soon.
I think that's everyone's prayer. Dr. Jack Preuss, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Folks, the gospel has a place on the battlefield because the battlefield is occupied on both sides of the line by sinners. And sinners need Jesus. That's what the gospel is about. It's about Jesus. Jesus needs to be there. He needs to be there in his word and in his sacraments, in baptism, in the Lord's Supper. And we've heard in this hour, there's an opportunity there. It is a mission field. It's a dangerous mission field, but it's a mission field. Sinners need Jesus. It's that simple. And that's why we have Ministry to Soldiers Military Chaplaincy. Because soldiers need him too. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.